Hello, and welcome to A Whole Mind. I'm your host, Greg Klima. I'm the executive director of Lorraine, of NAMI Lorraine County. And tonight, my guest is Nora Knoppel. Nora is the owner of Haven Hypnosis and Wellness in Norwalk, Ohio. She serves on the Huron County Board of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And she's also a master facilitator for the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. She teaches students throughout the state of Ohio on how to become an adult peer recovery supporter.
Yes.
Yeah, we've been doing that a long time.
It feels like it's been a long time. No, I love it.
I do too. I've always loved teaching. I don't get to do that as much as I do as I used to. But that's really rewarding work, isn't it?
It is very rewarding work. Every time I do it, I'm primarily online and get a new cohort, as you know, for 2 weeks. And they're like family.
Yeah.
By the end of the second week, you don't want to go. You don't know what you're going to do come Monday when you don't have to log on and see people. So it is. It's very rewarding. And I still hear from people that I've trained, you know, they tell me how they're doing in the field and, you know, get excited about the work they do.
And when you go down to the peer supporter convention, it's like, oh, hi.
It's a family reunion. Yeah. It's great.
Well, thank you for coming up to,
of course,
from Norwalk to talk about this. So hypnosis.
Yeah.
I have to admit, okay, I had a lot of prejudices here, okay?
Yeah.
When I think about hypnosis, you know, I go immediately to, you know, the shtick.
Yeah,
okay?
The movies.
You know, that somebody's going to, you know, hypnotize me and I'm going to cluck like a chicken,
mm-hmm,
or strip down to my boxers, or, you know,
right,
that you are going to hypnotize me and I'm going to end up embarrassing myself.
Right.
Right. You know, and, you know, I can embarrass myself all by myself. I don't need you to help me. But, you know, I know, I've heard so much that this is really a tool in the mental health world and, you know, really a tool for helping people especially get over some bad habits, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I did a lot of research this weekend.
Yeah, I have no doubt. No, having known you for a while, I would expect you to.
And I was really digging in. And, you know, it's one of those things, you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got really fascinated here.
Yeah.
So, I didn't even know what hypnosis was. So how would you describe what hypnosis is, and how would you describe what a hypnotic state is? So it's not certainly, you know, in the movies, you know, they put the swirls in people's eyes.
I don't have one of the whirly things.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Do you have a pocket watch? No.
I do not own a pocket watch.
Oh, well, how fun is that?
It surprises people. I don't own a pocket watch. So to partner your first question, you know, what is it? How do you know that you're in a trance? One of the things that I do when I'm doing my consultations with people to see if they're going to be good for me to take on as a client or if I'm good for them, that's really what I'm trying to see, because I might not be the hypnotist for them, and that's okay. And so we're actually in a state of hypnosis at least twice a day. I say at least because there's multiple ways that we can become entranced, but we're in trance at least twice a day without even realizing it. Everybody in this room, you, me, you've been hypnotized at least once today and probably didn't even realize it.
Okay. So then what is a hypnotic trance?
So, you know, when you're in that really deep, relaxed state, right when you're, and maybe you're not, because I don't know how you sleep, but most people, okay, when you're slipping off into that deep, relaxed state, right when you're ready to nod off and you're like, oh, this feels really good. I don't care if the smoke detector goes off. I don't care if my phone rings. I'm not moving from this spot. And then you have that same sensation upon awakening. When you're getting ready to wake up and you're like, oh, I know the alarm clock has gone off, but I'm still not moving. You're entranced. Your brain has moved into the wavelength, you know, out of the deeper stages, because up from gamma, up into delta. Up, right? So you're moving back up into that more cognitive stage. But when you're lulling into that space of deep, relaxed comfortability, you're becoming entranced. And that's exactly where the mind shifts when we're working in hypnosis.
So you're conscious but relaxed?
Yeah.
So
semi-conscious, right?
Okay.
So I call it cognitively aware, meaning that you're in a really deep, relaxed state so that you're able to access different parts of the mind, the unconscious, the subconscious, outside of the conscious thinking mind, which is where you are in awakening.
When I was doing the research, I kept on seeing these two things paired together.
Yeah.
Was deep relaxation and focused attention.
Perfectly said.
Yeah. I mean, which I thought was really interesting. And I kept on hearing, like, when you're, and I'm a big reader.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they said that state you're in when you're reading a really good book?
Yes.
And, like, you're not, and that's why I love to read.
You're engrossed in every word.
I'm not in the room anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in that city, on that bar. Isla Nebla.
Yes.
In Jurassic Park. You know, I'm in that space. Yeah. Or I'm on Tatooine or, you know, mm-hmm. I'm in another place.
Yeah.
And they say that is when you're in hypnosis, you're in a hypnotic space. It's like that. Yeah, sure. I know that I'm still in my reading chair in my family.
You're not surrounded by dinosaurs.
Yeah, I know that I'm not actually going to be eaten by a T-Rex.
Right.
But I feel like I'm there, you know. Mm-hmm. And they said that's kind of...
That is a great way to describe. And another, because one of the ways that I explain it too is, similarly, when you're engrossed in a really good movie where you've just taken your, you know, you're still in your living room, but you're like right there waiting for the outcome of whatever's about to happen, that engagement. And that is how hypnosis feels when you experience it. You are led through this guided script, if you will. I use script loosely because for probably the first part of my career, I used scripts. I would write scripts out for every single client. Now I go,
really?
Yeah. I have hundreds that I've written over the years, but now I go scriptless because I let the client...
How daring of you.
It's taken some time to get used to doing that, but the clients give me what they need, and I've done this long enough that I can build that as they go. They're really writing the script for me by, you know, me asking some... thought-provoking questions to really understand what the change is that they're looking for and how the behavior that they've had thus far has affected their life.
So, I heard too that the hypnotic state is you're kind of like lose track of time. Is that there's a decreased sense of time. And it's like my favorite movie is Casablanca.
Yeah.
And I'm always, which isn't the longest movie in the world.
It's not, Gone with the Wind.
No, but I'm always, because it's what, an hour and 45 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
But it always, I watch that movie and I'm always shocked at how, for me, it goes by in a minute.
And that's what we talk about in hypnosis time. It's said often that hypnosis time goes by very quickly, right?
Yeah, so, and that's what I heard is that hypnotic time goes by really quickly.
Really quickly, because you'll typically, a typical session with me is somewhere around 30 to 40 minutes of actual hypnosis, depending on what they're there for. And oftentimes clients will come back to awakening, we have a conversation, kind of debrief, and they'll go, what time is it? Like, how long have I been out? And I'm like 30 minutes. 30 minutes, I feel like I took a power nap. And it does feel like that for a lot of people. They feel really refreshed when they come forward because they've just really taken control of their life in a really monumental way. So if you think about, in 30 minutes, I've alleviated their stress because they had to relax to get into hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
They are without now any of those many of, maybe not all of, the obstacles or the blocks or the negative tension, whatever it was, that was, putting them in this place, this negative place that they were to begin with. So they quite literally feel like lighter, and the time has, like they've taken this big power nap because they're alleviated of a lot of the, spiritual kind of physical mind-body heaviness that they felt. As a result of whatever they came to see me for.
I was doing this reading, they said that, in this state, that people are you know, that in this state that people are really, there's a heightened sense of relaxation,
mm-hmm.
that they have a heightened ability to imagine. Like,
yes.
People who might not have the ability to imagine things.
Yes.
You know, because not everybody has great imagination. But it, when they're in this state,
mm-hmm.
that they can, you know what I'm saying?
They do. There, when you're in hypnosis, there is, you do have heightened sensations. It can be in imagination. But there's also, depending again on what you're working with people on, tendency of a hypersense of taste or smell.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example, and I'm not putting you in trance right now, right? I mean, it's safe to say that you're not in trance right now, right? As far as you know.
As far as I know.
But if I imagine, told you to hold your hand like this,
okay,
and imagine that I just put half of a lemon in your hand,
okay,
what's happening in your mouth right now?
It would be sour.
Yeah. And if you imagine that lemon right now, like the juice just kind of pouring over the skin, and you're looking at it, look at the lemon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, lemons tend to hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you noticing happening in your mouth?
Salivation.
Your salivation, yeah.
Yeah.
So you automatically start to salivate. There's no lemon in your hand, so
mm-hmm.
your mind is telling you that, oh, I'm salivating because this lemon, and if you concentrated on it long enough, you would even start to smell, or you would think that you're smelling.
Well,
lemon
happens to be one of my favorite smells,
well,
by
see,
the way.
Yes, I have no idea, but yes, you can put your hand on it, but that's how the mind works, right? And
mm-hmm.
so that's how hypnosis can work, though, to help people, is like offering those suggestions. Like, I didn't even have to put you in a deep trance for you to imagine that this lemon was there, and your mind starts to go, oh yeah, I'm salivating a little bit. I do have this, you know, sense of smell. I can imagine that I'm smelling this. And I could have done it with anything, you know, and the mind would go there. And so you do have a heightened sense of other sensations when you're in hypnosis. And again, it varies to degrees depending on what you're working on. And a lot of times that, you know, the hypnotist, a trained hypnotist can use those for the benefit of the client in really creative ways.
I just found it so interesting that people were able to find solutions to problems while they were in this hypnotic state,
yeah.
that they weren't able to access when, you know, in their
yeah.
in their normal mind.
Right.
And I just thought that was fascinating.
Well, I came into hypnosis, Greg, as a consumer first.
Okay.
In 1996, I'll give you the short version. The 1996, I was quite literally, I was dealing with postpartum depression. Now, it was before it was even in the DSM, so they didn't know what to do with me. And I had, you know, they thought, oh, well, you hadn't, the baby was long, you know, born months ago. You should be fine now.
Well, amazing things that have happened in those 20 years.
Absolutely.
Hasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I found myself in a very deep, dark place looking through the yellow pages. And for those of you that don't know what that is, you can Google the yellow pages. you know, I dated myself there. But I was looking through the yellow pages to find something, right?
Something,
and like,
anything. Yeah,
yeah,
to help.
Something.
Yeah.
And much like what we do in peer support, I was looking for hope. I didn't know what it was. And I found an ad for a hypnotist, and I thought, well, why the heck not? I've tried everything else. Nothing's worked. And I get so many of those calls now, and I go, yep, I was right there. Went to a hypnotist and found out that, you know, for all my life, I'd been told, you know, sit down, shut up, be quiet, don't talk. And those things were a barrier. They became an obstacle. They became programmed in my mind that when I had problems, I was just, in the back of my mind was, sit down, shut up, be quiet, don't talk. And so I couldn't, I went to traditional counseling. It wasn't working for me. Through hypnosis, I was able to open up, access that part of my mind, and then try traditional counseling again, and it worked.
Wow. That's amazing.
It really was. And I credit everything to my wellness, my mental well-being today, because I tried hypnosis.
Well, that brings up the next thing I wanted to talk
yeah.
about was what types of issues get addressed through hypnosis, I've always heard two things.
Mm-hmm.
One was weight control,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was smoking.
Yeah.
So I've heard that a lot of people have addressed smoking through hypnosis and eating. But, you know, here, depression, postpartum depression, mm-hmm. that was interesting. What other things have you used? Worked with hypnosis with your clients and mm-hmm. other things maybe you've heard it worked with?
So for me, myself, yeah, those are probably the two big ones, right? Smoking cessation, weight management or mindful eating that I work with. I wrote a book called The Mindful Eating Workbook in 2020 that I was worksheets that I was giving people anyway.
Yeah.
So it just made sense to put them all in one place.
No kidding. Yeah.
Those are usually the top two. I work with a lot of people with addictions, but they have to meet certain criteria with me. I won't take them like an early addiction. They have to still be going through some kind of a program. And what I do with them in addictions is to help them to understand that, you know, idea of cravings and things like that. And then I work with...
Sort of had to have identified their triggers already and...
Helps. Now, I do get calls for people who are in early addiction and I get based, you know, that I'm tapped into a lot of resources. I can get them to where they need to be and then they can work with me on other things to keep them from relapsing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my role in that. And I treat depending on the client, I treat the smoking cessation and sometimes the weight management part as addictions because sometimes it's got to do with their addictive personality. But other things that I specialize in are autoimmune diseases. I've done a lot of study and research based on, again, on my own lived and learned experience with an autoimmune disorder that helped me to be able to help people to do hypnosis for deep cellular change. So another thing that I've studied, so being able to lessen inflammation through hypnosis. So people with RA, lupus, and things like that, found a lot of help with that. They're able to, in some cases, reduce down their medicine. In my case, with my autoimmune disorder, I, in 15 years, haven't had to use medication because I've been using hypnosis and complementary care. As far as I'm also a Reiki master, if anybody knows what that is, it's a Japanese healing art.
Energy manipulation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been dealing with some of those complementary care things, studying them for a number of years. But other people come to me for the common ones, fears and phobias.
That's phobias, that was what I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah.
Flying.
Driving on the highway, he would be surprised at the number of people who have a fear.
I would not be surprised.
On the highway.
I would not. I know.
It's all about control.
Right. I know. Yeah. I know several people who will not drive on the highway because
they will take every back road and leave bunch early and to avoid
we'll
it.
Go 40.
Yes.
Will take go 45 minutes for a 15 minute ride
mm-hmm.
because they won't go on the highway.
I had a mother and daughter come to me last summer. They were afraid of storms.
I love storms too.
and they came to me, and here it was. Mom had delivered at a local hospital in a tornado warning, where they had to take all the bassinets and they had to seek shelter. So baby was just a few days old and inherited this fear because of that experience.
Okay.
And when here she was 20 years old and go, I don't know why I don't like storms. Well, having a conversation with both of them together and doing their intake together, which I rarely do, I learned. I know exactly why now you are afraid.
Immediate postnatal trauma?
Yes.
I mean, how can you even remember that?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. You wouldn't have like an actual memory of it, but it's still coded in your DNA in your mind.
What about insomnia? I've heard that, but that, I mean, how does that work?
I'm glad that you asked that, because there's a couple of different approaches I use for insomnia. And it depends, because people come to insomnia in a variety of different ways. So I like to get to the root cause of things first, and find out what is causing that insomnia, because a lot of times that's what I need to hypnotize for. The insomnia is just a byproduct. So a lot of times I'll do that first, but... with insomnia, sometimes it's hypnosis. Sometimes they just have a routine that's out of the norm. So maybe they work second shift or like a slant shift, you know, in between. And in their mind, they've been told that, you know, because they don't go to bed at 10 o'clock, that somehow they're a night owl. They've got this preconceived notion of what it's supposed to be, you know. And so it's just retraining their mind to know that this is your shift, this is your sleep schedule, and understanding that better. And sometimes with insomnia, I don't have to use hypnosis, so I can use yoga nidra, which is a type of meditation.
Well, we host a session every month.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. So to be able to help then induce that kind of weary tiredness into the mind so that they can sleep better.
Okay, and what generally managing stress?
Generally managing stress management is probably one of the biggest ones. I don't take insurance. I don't bill insurance for a variety of reasons. So I'm all self-pay. But a lot of insurance companies will pay for, allow our clients to use like their HSA accounts for stress management, weight management, smoking cessation. So
all of which kill.
Yeah. And so stress management's a big one. I do a lot of kind of talks on stress management, like at different civic meetings, Rotary meetings, Kiwanis, and all that. And to a lot of...
all of which are filled with stressed people.
And with the FOP. I like going to talk to the police and the fire department specifically about those things.
Yeah.
Because there's things that I can teach them about de-stressing, you know, after they've gone to a scene, and de-stressing, like, and doing, like, mindful breathing and stuff with the light. You know, there's this quick 60... but average stoplight takes about 60 seconds to get through.
Why does it feel like 2 hours?
It does. I think it depends on the intersection. They're probably longer up here, but helping them to find little ways to be able to de-stress, so when they get back to the station, if they get a debrief or write reports, the details are a little more clear. The clarity's there, and then the stress level's lower. They're able to manage stress better.
So you brought up yoga nidra and meditation.
Yeah.
How is meditation different from hypnosis? I mean, they're both they're all both kinds of altered realities.
The simple version is this: hypnosis and meditation, while both guided for the most part, if you're in a class, hypnosis is being led to do something, right? Meditation, the idea is to be absent of thought. So in hypnosis, you're actively thinking about the next thing and opening up your imagination and making these changes. In meditation, you're working to be absent of thought and just be and be present.
Right, yeah, just to be in the moment.
Yeah.
And let go of worrying about anything.
And not thinking about the things that maybe you would in hypnosis and tackling them directly. But as a byproduct of being able to focus and be present, you know, you can work on the stress and things like that that might lead into some of those difficulties that we see in hypnosis.
I may be conscious that my toes are cold.
Yes.
But I'm not trying to solve that my toes are cold.
Correct.
But where in hypnosis I may say, you know, okay, my toes are cold, now how can I solve that my toes are cold?
Right. And and what do I need to know about why my toes are cold, right? In meditation, you're just noticing that they are cold and
let it go.
That's it.
So one is solution-oriented and the other one is just to let go. And
just to be.
To be, yeah.
Or the practice of non-doing, as I say.
Yeah. And the other one is active doing.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. They are very different.
Mm-hmm.
So, this idea of because when you're hypnotized, and I think this is the thing that everybody is fearful of, including me, is this because you're in this heightened state of suggestibility, does it make people vulnerable?
There's a yes and a no. So yes, in the fact that if you didn't have a competent trained person, could you be manipulated to do something? Or if you were in a setting, like you mentioned, the stage hypnotist and the comedians that use this tool to get that end result, to make people laugh. Yes, it can be designed that way. Now, most hypnotists in my field will say, no, 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 you can't beat because your mind is set up to keep you safe and it won't let you do anything that you wouldn't want to do. And that's correct. That's the no part. So it's not linear, black and white. You know, it's really suggestibility. Yes, you can be open to and be vulnerable to, lack of a better way of saying it, to be manipulated to do things. But it's not anything that you wouldn't normally want to do. So the stage hypnotist we talk about, right? And I'm giving a trade secret away here, I guess. But a lot of times when they get people up there, there's two factors automatically that make that entertaining. One of them is that most of the people who are on this stage who are volunteers are intoxicated in some form.
Okay.
So a hypnotist like me, I'm not going to hypnotize in the clinical setting someone who is intoxicated. The second thing that puts up that vulnerability factor and that manipulation factor is the fact that somewhere in that psyche, because their inebriation has brought down some of their give-a-darn factor, there's a part of their brain that says, I can blame this on the alcohol, so I can give myself permission to look like a fool right now, because I can blame it on, and I can say, oh, I didn't remember, whatever. Nobody would know, except the person being hypnotized. So they're kind of two different things. But in the clinical setting, if you had somebody who, and let's face it, unfortunately, in all walks, in all practices of well-being, you have people who misuse, and hypnosis is no different. Unfortunately, we have had people in the profession who have utilized this beautiful tool that's a gift that helps many people to unfortunately manipulate people, hypnotize people maybe that they didn't have business hypnotizing because maybe their mind, their cognition wasn't where it should be to hypnotize somebody. And unfortunately take advantage of people.
So it is possible to implant a false memory into somebody's mind?
I think, in my experience, I think that you could.
Okay.
I think that you could. But I think that being that the way that the mind works, that would be short-lived. Because the mind is set up to keep you safe, and if you feel safe, then you can experience other things. But first and foremost, the mind is set up to keep you safe. So if that were to happen, I say short-lived, because there's that part of the mind that would still kind of run behind the scenes that would question and second-guess, right? Because the mind, that's trying to keep you safe, is going, I don't really understand what just happened.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense to me. So it tries to rationalize the irrational. And so I think that's why, and I trained early on when I first got my hypnosis training in 2001, I was actually trained in forensic hypnosis. And it's one of the reasons why across the country, many forensic hypnotists they're not viable to, as you know with law, they're not viable to the witness because of that very reason.
Yeah, it's not admissible evidence.
No.
Memory that's been...
If I'm being paid by the prosecution, I'm going to, there's a chance that...
It's
that
just not admissible.
Not that I... Right.
Any memory that's been retrieved through hypnosis is not admissible at all.
Right. And like I was saying, the reason for that is because a lot of hypnotists have misused that. Because
yep.
There was the mindset from the judges that, depending on which side of the law you're on, you're going to program this hypnotist to say what you want the prosecution or the defense to say.
So are there people who just can't be hypnotized?
I say that everybody can.
Because you say that you screen people.
Yeah.
That's your first thing is that you sit down and you say, hey, is this what candidate?
I always say everybody can to a degree because I think everybody has different levels to which they can be. I screen people because not everybody should be. And there are people that, even if they can be, I say they shouldn't be because it's usually people who don't have good cognition, some kind of mental disability. So their mind doesn't quite think the exact same way as yours or mine might. So I'm screening for those things. I'm asking certain questions about, you know, treatments that they've had and so forth, because the school of thought used to be that, you know, it was just if you had like a mental disability or a cognitive disability, traumatic brain injury, those kinds of things. But we're starting to learn in hypnosis that there's different ways of suggestibility that we can work with people that do have those kinds of disabilities. But I'm still screening because there's people that if they're really severe, like they're not going to grasp the imagination part of it in quite the same way that I'm explaining it, right? I think I told you once that, you know, I might tell them to imagine, like, you know, they're in a soft, fluffy pillow, you know, bed, just really relaxed and feeling weightless. And they might have this ingrained fear. They might assume weightless is like floating, and it could terrify them, right? So light and floaty and airy is not the same to my mind as it is to somebody who has a deep cognitive disability.
It might not be a desirable state.
Correct.
For most people, that would be like, oh, isn't this nice? But that could be terrifying, like you said.
It could be, yeah.
When I was reading, I found that, you know, it seemed like most of the stuff I read said that people who lived with psychosis,
yes,
would, that they were,
it not was good a, candidates.
Yeah,
not good candidates.
Not good candidates. Because they were already misinterpreting sensory data.
Yes.
So that it was.
Or people with schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And things like that. There might be other things that we can do, you know, through mindful meditation, which doesn't, you know, as I said, you know, you don't have to use the mind in the same way. You might be able to achieve certain things, relaxation, stress management, with people with certain cognitive or mental discrepancies that hypnosis is just not a viable candidate for them, not a viable tool for them.
Okay. So I'm your patient.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you suggest I do to prep before I come to you for your... I mean, you know, is this like I should wear loose clothes, like, you know, a yoga thing? I mean, what do I do before?
I tell my clients, and I call them clients because I'm not a medical clinician. I'm a hypnotist, not a hypnotherapist. So there's a little bit of a difference there. I tell clients to just come as they are. I want them to be comfortable.
Okay.
Come as they are to a degree. Because I have had people, you know, question what that is and want to come in various stages of undress. I wish I was kidding. But... that's why I screen people.
I've worked with the public long enough. I know you're not.
Yes. That's why I screen people, because we have to word those things off and have discussions. But
well, you know, however they feel.
Yeah,
you know,
if you normally throughout the day, you know, if you're 9 to 5 is, you know, khakis and a sweater and just you.
I'm always in khakis.
Yeah,
and
so
down, you know.
Come like that. You know, I had a guy come in for smoking cessation. He's a mechanic. He goes, I'm coming right in after work. I mean, I'm still going to have my, you know, my stuff on. I'm going to be greasy. I'm like, I don't care. Come in. If that's what you know, I'm not going to judge you. I don't have them really prepare.
There's no prep I have to, your clients have to do ahead of time.
No, that's...
I need you to spend 10 minutes of deep breathing before...
Nope.
So there's nothing...
Nothing that you have to do to prep. Just come as you are with an open mind and a willingness to participate.
Okay. So then, what does this session look like? So, you know, because I heard some descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered what your sessions look like.
So... As I mentioned, I do a phone intake, and that doesn't cost anybody anything. And I'm asking them some pretty specific questions before they even book the appointment. So once they get in the door, I'm there to take care of them. We have a brief kind of upfront talk. I've got my notes there from the phone call, because I'm really just kind of playing back to make sure that I got everything that they said, that they didn't leave anything out, you know, other information that, oh, maybe I forgot to mention this. I didn't know if it was a big deal. Sometimes that happens. So I'm doing a little bit of a pre-talk, as I call it, taking some notes. And then I explain to them what the session's going to look like. You're going to feel really relaxed. There might be times where you might be aware of my voice. There might be times where you're not aware of my voice, and that's perfectly normal. And so I'm kind of taking them through step by step what they're going to experience, because I don't want them to also feel anxious. If they've never been hypnotized before, they don't know what they're going to expect.
You got to prep them for what's going
to
happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you don't take a little bit of time to talk them through what you might expect, that anxiousness is not going to allow them to relax. And by proxy, you're not going to have a good hypnosis session. So just taking that time up front. But in that pre-talk, I'm asking them things. I'm building that script like I talked about, taking notes about the changes that they want, and then going through and inducing that hypnotic state, usually through a variety of, there's so many ways to get inducted into hypnosis.
So it's part of that, you find out, like, you know, what they like. So
what,
like,
they,
if you,
like,
you,
I kind
you,
of,
you know, if somebody's a skier, you might use
maybe
mountain imagery.
Depends
if, you
on
know.
What we're working on. I'm also checking for different cues on if they're a visual learner, if they're an auditory learner, if they learn by doing, because if, depending on which one of those or if they're a combination, I can utilize those sensory factors to help them in this process in a variety of ways. So if they're an auditory learner, they're going to want to hear me talking. They're not going to want a lot of pregnant pauses. They're going to want to be led. You know, if they're a visual learner, they're going to want really descriptive imagery. So I'm asking them some of these questions to know what cues to give, and then building it in order to have them have the most success. Because ultimately, I want them to put me out of a job. I want to get them out of there as few a sessions as possible. And so that's why I do that work up front.
You ask them to close their eyes.
It depends on the session. Typically, I do.
Okay.
At some point, I do. But sometimes if people are also very visual learners and are anxious by nature, I might do an eye focus induction, which has them leave their eyes open and focus on any focal point in my room.
Okay.
For whatever reason, a lot of people focus on the 2-1-1 poster across the way. Maybe it's because it's colorful. But sometimes I will do an induction like that where their eyes will stay open for a period of time and then I'll have them close them. If I notice that somebody feels like maybe they're not as susceptible to hypnosis, they think maybe they've been told they weren't able to be hypnotized or whatever, there's a variety of cues that I might use to have them open their eyes mid-hypnosis and then close them again and then have them try to open them and then they notice that they can't. There's little subtle kind of tricks like that to kind of help them to use their mind to understand that, oh, I am hypnotized because thought I could open my eyes, can't open my eyes now, must be hypnotized. So there's a lot of little tricks to the trade like that.
But how do you know that they've achieved trance?
So for me, I'm watching for a couple of things. When they've achieved trance, in my experience, their breathing changes. So the breath out will start to become a little bit longer than the breath in because they're letting go of the tension and the stress. And so I'm watching for that. I also am watching for different things that happen with their body. Like when they get into deeper trance or they relax, their shoulders will fall slightly. Their hands might fall off their lap and things like that. So I'm watching for certain body cues.
And then the real work begins.
And then the real work begins. And then we go through.
And it's going to vary from each person, right?
Yeah. And sometimes people, surprisingly, they'll come back to awakening when you didn't want them to. And you go, all right, what happened there? And then you just stop recording and you have a conversation. And because the mind's going in places, I'm not, believe it or not, I'm not a mind reader. So I have to trust the client. And I'm building that all up front. That if you, for whatever reason, you don't feel safe, you open your eyes, you'll be back to awakening in a few minutes. And then we have a conversation about whatever transpired. And if it makes sense to take them back down, we do. And if it doesn't, then we scrap the session and either try again, you know, in a couple of days or say, you know what, maybe you're better at home. And I can do this recording for you. And, you know, we'll do some things. And then you listen to this at home. So it'll be a shorter version. So they're in their own space. And sometimes that's the key, that they're just like, it's the space, and I'm not in my own element, and, you know. So you have to be patient and prepare for those things. They can happen.
But, you know, in that, when they're in that space, you know, you're guiding them for maybe giving them suggestions,
yeah,
helping them maybe find their own suggestions.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I was doing the reading, I was just amazed at the fact that people saw things in a trance mm-hmm. that they couldn't see in their normal life.
I do a process that I'm trained in called wholeness work. It was actually derived from a hypnotist and neurolinguistic practitioner, Connie Ray Andreas. If you're curious about it, you can look it up. It's called the wholeness work process. And even though like their eyes are closed, they're not in really deep stages of hypnosis when we do this process. They're talking back and giving us information. And a lot of times in wholeness work, they can go in and dissolve that like heavy toxic energy around whatever cocoon they're keeping things in, trauma, anxiousness, stress, whatever it might be, and able to look at it. And through wholeness work, you're having them describe it through your sensory process. So I'm asking them like what shape it is and what color it is and the sensation quality of it, right? So, you know, you might be dealing with years of heavy trauma, but you're not looking at it like the experience that you experienced. You're experiencing it as a sensory experience from the energy perspective of where you're holding it. So if you hold your tension in your shoulders, you might say, oh, it's in my shoulders and it's about the size of a small loaf of bread. And, you know, so then they're working to decrease that size and through hypnosis. And they're talking to me the whole time, like, and what's it doing now? And, well, the color changed, or now it's really kind of, it's not hard anymore. It's kind of goopy or whatever they come up with. And I just go with it and go, okay, that's right.
That's so fascinating.
It's very fascinating. I love doing that process because it is very client-led. I'm literally sitting there going, and what's it doing now? And then I'm quiet, and then they're giving me information. It's a beautiful thing when they come all the way back to awakening, and they go, I don't know how I carried that around for 25 years, and in 40 minutes you just, I don't feel that anymore. I don't feel that connection to it anymore.
Which brings up, how long do people come? I mean, because I had heard that some people come one time and they mm-hmm. go, thank you.
Yeah.
and other people do take longer, especially smoking and weight loss
sometimes.
And phobias mm-hmm. tend to take longer.
They can. Not that I want a brag, because it's never about my ego, as I mentioned to you before. But in my smoking cessation clients, I have a lot of success with people coming in and having one session and never smoking again. I have an 89% success rate.
Oh, my God.
That. I track that.
That's unbelievable.
I do follow up with them just to ensure, like, you know, that we got the right suggestions in place and that, you know, I hit all the right stress
wow.
markers and stuff. So that's the importance of asking all those questions and interviewing up front. Weight management people are with me usually longer, depending on the duration of what their goal is. I really try to get them out of there with as few sessions as possible with the most success. And typical session, I book for an hour because we have pre and post talk. You're usually getting about 30 to 40 minutes of actual hypnosis in those sessions. And I record every session. So not only do you get the session with me, you're leaving there with the suggestions, but you also get an audio recording of every session you do with me, so that kind of cements the suggestions. So it's yours forever. There's no upcharge on it. So I think that's why I see the success, because, you know, they have their session with me and then they leave and they go, now I'm supposed to recall all this. Well, the recording helps them to continue that continuum of care. Yeah.
So I'm doing this reading, and I'm.
I love that you researched all this so deeply.
I
know who you are.
I get to learn about something.
I was so excited.
So I'm reading about hypnotism in the operating room.
Yeah.
So they've done research about, so they give patients an option, and you can do general anesthesia,
mm-hmm.
or they let people do a local with hypnotism.
Yeah.
And the people who choose hypnotism with a local are reporting lots less pre-surgery anxiety.
Yeah.
And then lots less post-op pain, post-op nausea, post-op fatigue.
Yeah.
And I think back to when I busted up my ankle.
Yeah.
And I realized they did it on me. So this is what happened.
Yeah.
So they gave me a spinal, they said, do you want to go under? And I'm not a big fan in general, mm-hmm. okay, because mm-hmm. I get really bad reactions to it.
Sure.
And so what they did is, you know, they had them reconstruct both yeah. bones, okay? And this woman sat there, and she...
lightly rubbed your arm?
Rubbed my arm.
Mm-hmm. Effleurage, yes.
And she just talked to me mm-hmm. the whole time.
Yep.
And they gave me a spinal block.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a shot. They put something into my spine.
Mm-hmm.
And they took it out afterward.
Mm-hmm.
And it avoided a lot of problems. Was that what they were doing to me?
It sounds like it. So effleurage is a massage technique, which is the light stroking that she was doing. And that was to take your mind off of everything else and to put your focus on the sensation of being caressed and cared for and compassion.
Well, she was holding my hand.
Yeah.
And she was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And she, my attention.
Conversational hypnosis.
Yeah.
I would have
and
to
she
guess.
Had this very calm voice.
Mm-hmm. Drew out her words like you're doing now.
Yeah. And my attention, and she, I remember she was on my, because it was on my right.
Yep. So she was
and
on
she
the
was,
other side.
She was on my left. And I never thought about it until I was reading that, and I was
like holy moly.
And they were just like, you know, would you like this local instead, and here are the benefits of using a local, and I was like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
And then I read that, and have you heard about this use
I
before?
Have. I actually have a colleague in New York City who works for a surgeon. She's a trained hypnotist like myself. And she works for a surgeon. She's a surgical nurse, you know, as her other job. But she's trained in hypnosis, and that's one of the things that she does pre-surgery. She also does recordings for their patients. So if she's got, depending on the surgery, if she's got other duties, they'll put headphones on with her voice and let them listen. And she also does that in post-op. So it's very common. And I actually... it's probably been 3 years now that I've been actively using what we call birthnosis. That's coined by me, and I own the website birthnosis.com.
Trademark.
It is trademark.
TM circle.
It is trademark birthnosis. So back when I started my training in 2001, and then I became master certified in 2005, they trained us in all these things: medical, dental. And birth and so forth. So I went through these processes and learned them. And then I sat down with a friend of mine used to teach Lamaz in Sandusky. And so I was allowed to go into her class and talk to them about what I do and offer and leave my cards or whatever. And I'd get a couple of clients from that. And so I started to build my own process with this. I just had a mom, my recent birthnosis client, delivered in May of this year, and was going through the sessions, and after she gave birth, probably about 4 days after she gave birth, she was home and resting, and she said, I had to text you and tell you that her doula was so impressed that she barely made a sound during labor. She said, I don't know what you did, but like you whimpered like one time, like you were like groaning when you pushed, and like that was it.
Total,
first time mom.
Totally drug free?
Yeah, totally drug free.
Wow.
Completely. First time mom, which rarely ever happens.
Yeah, come on.
She was a champ. That wasn't all me. Like, there was some real mental capacity in there. So, you know, kudos to that client. Because
good luck to you with that.
it's
that could be
fascinating.
Be revolutionary.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to touch briefly on the potential downsides.
Yes.
Because some people do report some side effects. Mm-hmm. They're not real common.
Not common.
But some people say sometimes that they have some headaches afterward, right?
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
And they are short-lived.
They are short-lived, and sometimes that I find, at least in my experience, a big portion of the small percentage that have reported headaches to me, a lot of that had to do with dehydration. So,
really?
Yeah. They think about when you get nervous about something, right? You don't tend to do real good self-care, right? So you're not taking, you come into a session the first time, you might not eat properly, you know, your stomach is a little nervous, so they didn't drink a lot of water. So yeah, every time I've ever debriefed somebody who said, I had a little bit of a headache, it lasted about this long, you know, I went back and asked them about their pre-session, kind of what they did. And so I guess going back to that earlier question, if I said, do anything, you know, is there anything I need to do to prepare, eat and drink?
Yeah.
I would go back on that question. But yeah, a lot of them were back to, I felt that it was dehydration.
Would that also explain some people do report being drowsy afterward?
Mm-hmm. I would say it was probably along the same kinds of things, because the drowsy effect could be a variety of things. Maybe, I don't know if they maybe took something to alleviate any anxiousness they had before coming in. There's always that. The other thing, the drowsy factor could be too, and I've had some people even say, I feel a little queasy. Depending on what we are working on, especially if we're doing like energy work, like dissolving the energy around trauma and things like that, you know, people have been carrying that around so long, and it is quite literally cellularly changing. So you can have these temporary discomforts, such as the drowsiness, the headaches, and some mild queasiness, depending on what we're working on. But I usually, afterwards in the post-talk, am doing, you know, how are you feeling? What are you noticing? I'm not planting that suggestion of, do you have a headache? Because I'm like, oh, maybe I do. Because post-hypnotic, you're even more susceptible than you were as you're coming out. That's when I think you're even more susceptible to suggestions. So I'm really careful about what I ask them when they come out. But if they report those things to me, I have them sit for a while. I'll give them some water. We'll have a conversation, making sure that they're nice, even plateau before they go out the door.
I just think it's good practice after any mental health session. Hydrate.
Because you're quite literally changing the chemical makeup of your body through the self-care, whether it's therapy, talk therapy, or anything. I mean, it's profound.
Your brain is working so hard, and you know it's burning. And water.
Hydrate. Yeah.
So for people who are not in Huron County, and what would be the best way to find a qualified hypnotist or hypnotherapist? What would be a good way?
So one of the things I tell people is to ask them for references, for resources. Now, I never give out my clients' information, right? So a lot of my client base comes to me from referrals. So somebody who's come to me is, you know, referred them to me. But if you don't have that, you know, ask them for referrals. Like, are they vetted by anybody? A lot of practicing hypnotists, including myself, get referrals from doctor's offices. I get doctor's offices sending me smoking cessation, weight management, stress management clients. So ask them, you know, are you vetted by anybody besides the Better Business Bureau? There's a reason I'll say that, but by somebody else, mainly like doctor's offices and things like that. Are there people that are sending you referrals? Who are they? Can I talk to them? Because if they're sending you referrals, they vetted your process. There's a reason they're sending their patients or their clients to you. And if they say, I don't have that, I don't give that information out, find somebody who will, because there might be a reason why they're not talking about the vetting process. So, yeah.
Okay. And is it do more than just go to the list at the state?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because hypnosis in and of itself is not a regulated practice. So unless it's a hypnotherapist, they're not going to have a license with the state that you can go back and report on if they've done anything. for me myself, I mean, I have a reporting agency that's who certifies my credentials. I have to have 30 hours of continuing ed every year before they'll even take my check. So I have to provide them with a laundry list of the trainings I've taken in a year, and I have to do that every single year.
Okay.
Even though I'm not licensed, my vetting board, who certified me in 2001 and in 2005, and then a separate vetting board in 2018 that board certified me through their hypnosis board, I have to meet those credentials. Fortunately, all the credentials work for each agency, but every year I have to have 30 hours of continuing ed in order to keep in practice. It's not a, I want to clarify that, it's not a regulated practice in Ohio. Now, there are some states that are, but in 45 of the 50 states, it's not a regulated practice. So make sure you vet your hypnotist to make sure that they're credible.
Very good. Nora, thank you for coming up.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I found the research on this and our conversation.
I'm so glad you did.
I was fascinated, and I just really opened up my eyes to something I held in the...
I know, we've had conversations about how you felt about it. And even though we're friends, you're like, I'm weirded out by what you do.
I had a lot of skepticism.
I respect that.
Until I dug into it. So thank you for coming up.
Oh,
Nora's information will be in the comments below. And thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time, thanks for watching.